Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, world-renowned broadcaster and environmentalist David Attenborough has delivered an emphatic message of responsibility on dealing with climate issues to world leaders with COP26, the UN Climate Change Conference, kicking off this week in Glasgow. Let's hear what he had to say.
I think it would be really catastrophic if the developed nations of the world, the more powerful nations of the world, simply ignored these problems. Do we say, oh, it's nothing to do with us and cross our arms? We caused it. Our kind of industrialization is one of the major factors in producing this change in climate. So we have a moral responsibility. Even if we didn't cause it, we would have a moral responsibility to do something about thousands of men, women and children who have lost everything.
David Attenborough from the set of his new documentary, The Green Planet. Well, just ahead of COP26, for the first time, Ireland has committed to setting legally binding limits on greenhouse gas emissions with yesterday's publication of carbon budgets. Now the wait is on to see the exact carbon ceilings individual sectors such as energy, transport and agriculture will face. To look at this in a bit more detail now, I'm joined from our Athlone studio by Barry Cowan, Fianna Fáil TD for Laoise Offaly, and on the line by Ivana Bacic, Labour spokesperson on the environment and climate. Thanks both for joining us. Ivana, I'll come to you first. You've welcomed the carbon budgets, but you say the devil will be in the detail. Have you concerns?
Well, thank you for inviting me on. And yes, I do very much welcome the publication at last of these important carbon budgets. But I think it's unfortunate that they were published so late and on a bank holiday Monday in a week when the Dáil is not sitting, because I think it's vitally important that we have a chance to scrutinise those. I hope we will be debating them next week, and I expect we will. But they had been expected and indeed promised by government much earlier than this, ideally in advance of our actual fiscal budget, so that we could have aligned them both and debated them in the same context. What these carbon budgets do, however, is set a ceiling, giving the maximum amount of greenhouse gases that can be emitted over a specific period of time by Ireland. So it is crucially important that we have these available to us. But as I've said, the devil is in the detail, because we don't yet have from the government the detail as to how that the reductions in emissions will be broken down over the sectors, over agriculture, over transport, over energy, housing and industry. So those are the critical details that will need to be published, and very swiftly. We're now heading in, as you've said, to the crucial conference of the parties, or COP26. As it's known in Glasgow, which is starting this weekend. And we had very much hoped, in the opposition, that the government would be able to go to COP26 with a clear plan laid out, a timeline and a detailed plan for the delivery of the emissions reductions over the time period in the carbon budget. The unfortunate thing is the carbon budget is already running late, because it was supposed to start running on the 1st of January of this year. So we're already behind target, and it's so crucially important for us in Ireland and for the planet that we move as swiftly as possible to ensure that we meet these crucial emissions reductions targets.
You also said today that carbon budgets have to be clear and transparent. Are you concerned that when it comes to the burden sharing here, that lobbying may play a part, that he who shouts the loudest may take less of a burden?
Well, that's always a concern with climate. I mean, we know that there will be really serious challenges in meeting the targets. It's been widely flagged that there will be huge reductions required, for example, from energy, from the energy and electricity sector, 70 to 80% reduction required. So, you know, we're seeing huge reductions in particular sectors. There's a concern, I think, that we need to move really swiftly to build the infrastructure now in this first period up to 2025, so that we can meet even more ambitious reductions targets from 2026 to 2030. And I think the Climate Change Advisory Council has set that out. But what they've really set out is headline figures, if you like, and the detail as to which sector is going to, as to how the sectors are going to do this, and as to which particular sector is going to move swiftly. And, you know, that's what we need to see. So, you know, what I'm hearing from those involved in the energy and electricity sector is that they are they are, I think, optimistic that we can meet targets in terms of generation of electricity from renewable sources if we move swiftly to build, in particular, offshore wind capacity, which we don't have in place at all yet. We're just starting from a low base, and that's the concern. But there are opportunities there, and I think that's also a crucial message, that this is not just doom and gloom, that there are opportunities here, but we must ensure a just transition, and that those who will be most severely impacted by the pace of change, that there will be mitigation measures in place and proper measures put in place by government to ensure that people working in sectors that are going to be hit are going to be compensated.
I want to bring Barry Cowan in here. As a government TD, you might be able to give us some of the detail that's in it. I know it's yet to be decided, but we're hearing reports that farmers could have to reduce emissions between 21 and 30%. Is that your understanding of it? And if so, do you think that's fair and proportionate?
No, I don't have the detail that we'd like to have at this stage. I share Ivana's assessment in that there is broad agreement by the government and indeed opposition parties about the rates that need to be achieved. The government's duty now is to put together, prioritise climate action plan in place, provide the tools by which this ambition can be realised. The targets announced, as Ivana has said, the second period are twice that the rate of emission reduction for the first 5 years, and that's appropriate. Each department will have its own target and its own ambition, and each department, I expect, will have its own enabling measures. Those enabling measures have to be fair, to be just, realistic. And in some cases, maybe not all, but there'll have to be elements of enticement, whether it be by grant or investment and expenditure and potential visible rewards for environment, relevant sectors, industries and farm families, as you have alluded to, in relation to their expectations. So sectoral interests and regions have to be empowered, given responsibilities with roles that determine resolutions are rewarded. And I think that's important.
And can I ask you that question I put to Ivana Bacic, that when the burden is shared out, is that set in stone, or is there the potential for the farmers to come and renegotiate their part, or other industries? Or is it your understanding that what's announced will be it?
Yeah, well, look, we'd like to hope and assume and expect that there will be consultation and negotiation and agreement in respect of each department and its responsibilities with the various sectors underneath it. You know, you mentioned earlier the expectation in relation to the farming sector. I personally and many others reject the narrative, the lazy narrative, that cutting the herd is a solution. Farmers throughout the country and in my own region are more than willing to play their part and must remain at the centre of government policy. An empowering farming sector to ensure that we align production systems, environmental ambition with consumer sentiment. Doing that and meeting those targets will only be, as I said, by consent, negotiation and agreement. But the government will be bold and generous and ensure the change occurs at no cost, but with incentives. And I hope and expect that will be explored, and the different tools that can help the farming sector, for example, in relation to genomics, in relation to feedstuffs, energy generation and carbon sequestration, all potentially can yield greater incomes for farm families. And that's, as Ivana said in her closing remarks, is where we'd like to be, and we have to ensure that we empower people to be in that position to realise that sort of ambition.
And Ivana Bacic, can I put that point that Barry Cowan made there about the national herd to you? Is it a lazy argument? Where do you stand on the issue?
Well, I think that what's clearly coming out now from Chagas, who are the experts on this as our state's agricultural research body, I think what we're hearing from them is the need for agriculture to get off to a fast start in cutting emissions at this point, but to look at how we have a suite of technologies available to farmers to do so, that this can reduce emissions in really significant ways. And I think there's some really heartening signposts here when we see Chagas, the Department of Agriculture and the food industry, announcing a programme just this year to develop a new signpost programme for farmers to work with researchers to implement environmental and emissions reduction technology. So I think the point is we need to bring everyone with us in agriculture, as everywhere else, to use the technologies available, as we're seeing with offshore wind generation for energy, as we're seeing with the ramping up of electric cars in transport, and as we're seeing with home retrofits to ensure that emissions from housing can be reduced. So I think it's about harnessing the technologies available to us and grasping the opportunities that are there to ensure that we meet our targets before we start talking about the cruder measures that have been signposted.
The IFA says the viability of a lot of farms is on the line here, and the reality is that a lot of the changes we're facing, they're going to hit rural areas the hardest.
I think we have to be very conscious that there are going to be some communities in some areas that will be hit hardest, and that's why we talk about just transition, and that's why we have to ensure that there are mitigation measures put in place to ensure that people, that, as I say, we bring people with us. This is far too important and urgent an issue for to have any sort of divisive rhetoric or them and us kind of language around. I think climate change is something that all of us, and I mean, you know, school children all around the country from urban and rural communities are hugely engaged on. And I think we need to, those of us in politics and in the legislature need to learn from that, to try and move along in a consensus-based way, to bring people with us and to ensure that there is a just transition, that mitigation measures are put in place so that we can meet our targets and do so in a way that people appreciate the importance of what we're all doing. Because it's about individual, community and governmental action. But that's why delays in government action are most unfortunate and disappointing. We do need to see government reaching out, bringing people along, and that takes time. That, you know, that requires a little bit of time. So it's not, I think, appropriate to be publishing plans at the last minute and to be going to COP26 with one arm tied behind the back of the country in terms of having a lack of detail. So, you know, I'm hopeful as an opposition climate spokesperson of working with government and with communities constructively to ensure we meet our crucially important targets.
Barry Cowan, you've been critical for some time about how this government is implementing just transition plans. Is it the case that they're rushing through policy ahead of having the actual infrastructure there?
Well, that was the case in relation to the acceleration of decarbonisation by Bord na Mona, because the just transition that was provided, the way in which it was targeted and the way it was administered and delivered, did not meet with the approval of the locality, or they did not see the benefit of that. I spoke to the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste and Minister Ryan in June about those issues, and I would hope to see them addressed in what's known as the just or in the territorial plan that has now been sent by government to the EU Commission to draw down a further 85 million euro that is specifically designated and geared towards peat regions in transition. And I would hope and expect that the likes of Offaly County Council will administer that scheme now, rather than the Minister's Department itself. They will have the potential to explore, they will have the potential to adjudicate and reward relevant applications in order to give them greater ownership of the solutions, and in order that the people themselves can then see the delivery on the ground that they haven't seen to date. Yes, that is something to learn from. I also am somewhat worried about the issue in relation to energy and the costs associated with it, the way in which they've risen in relation to fuel as well, and the role that Airgrid and Comreg have had in the past is not one covered in glory, when you consider the likes of ESB winning four contracts to provide renewables, withdrawing from them and paying a penalty at the loss of 430 megawatts to the system.
Yeah.
At the same time at which we provided the loss of 230 megawatts with Lanesborough and Shannonbridge power stations. And that's not something that should be brushed under the carpet. That's something that has to be exposed, and questions have to be asked as to why that was the case and what is being done in order to ensure that competition is adequate and competition creates an atmosphere that can ensure prices come down, not go up.
But Barry Cowan, we heard Hollier saying that the technology for them just isn't there at the moment to help them go greener. So this is a very hard sell all around, particularly you as a rural TD. How do you sell it to your constituents and those groups who are so against it?
Well, for example, I know Ivana says that, you know, we don't want to be going to the COP in Glasgow in 2 weeks' time with one hand behind the back. But now that we've begun this process, now that we have legislation backing it up, now that we have carbon budgets put in place, now there is a responsibility on departments to ensure that we meet those targets by consent, negotiation and agreement. And if that takes time, so be it. But it is up to the relevant leaders within government to ensure that there's adequate and proper negotiation and proper incentives and initiatives and investment to help and assist the likes of the hauliers, to help and assist the likes of the farming fraternity and those involved in the provision of public transport. Okay. From a private perspective, that they get every help and assistance to ensure that we come out of this better than we're going into it.
Finally, can I come to you, Ivana Bacic? This is a long-term plan, and you may find yourself in government in the future when some of the heaviest lifting has to be done on this. Is there cross-party and political will there to do what's going to be laid out here?
Well, certainly for our part in Labour, we fully appreciate the scale of the challenge and the fact that we all must work together to ensure that we achieve these vitally important internationally set targets. So I absolutely think that, you know, we are approaching this constructively, and I think most legislators on a cross-party basis do so too, that this is too important an issue to be playing sort of petty party politics on. And I do also think that it's crucial at this point that the government would put in place the necessary investment and resourcing for the infrastructure, as I say, to ensure that in the next five-year period after 2026, that those more ambitious targets for reduction will be capable of being met. We simply don't have the physical capacity, as I've said, for the offshore wind generation that we need, for example, to increase our share of renewables. But our political will is there. For me, as a green-red, as a green social democratic legislator and individual, this is crucially important. Okay. I asked the Minister last week to, you know, please give us these detailed plans as soon as we can. We need to have them, and I'm hopeful we'll see them very, very soon. It's unfortunate.
And I'm sure we'll talk about this again when we have seen those details. Ivana Bacic, Labour spokesperson on the environment and climate, and Barry Cowan, Fianna Fáil TD for Leash Offaly. Thank you both for joining us. We'll be back after the break.